These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert.
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? What are you talking about?
I felt nauseous with just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking.
I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We are just over a week away from The Last Jedi premiering in theaters and the newest addition to the Star Wars cinematic franchise becoming a part of our collective experience. We cannot wait. We've got so much to talk about in this edition of the show. Our Return of the Jedi rewatch as we continue getting ready for The Last Jedi. We'll also think about some of the things that have been brewing around in our heads here before the movie comes out and play a new segment where we do a little bit of trivia to get all of this involved in one episode of the podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike. Guys, great to be back with you again. This is the time where we really start to get uncomfortable wondering whether or not we are going to actually get to see this movie we have talked about for what seems like ages. We will finally have the chance next week. And to start things off, what are some of the thoughts that are just going through your head right now when you know that you're going to see The Last Jedi in about 8 days?
I had a thought today. We were just emoting there. I had an actual thought today, a realization as I was running through things in my mind, that I realized with everything that's been sort of teased about this movie and put in the trailers is so much about, you know, Luke and Rey's relationship and the potential for her training, the question about her parentage, and you know where Luke is at. But I realized one thing that they haven't like suggested at all is a meeting or a face to face between Luke and Kylo. And what I was thinking was there's the obvious thought of Han is gone and Luke will be seeing his former student. But what I thought of from the other end is like, you know, Kylo Ren has this whole history of idolizing Vader, his grandfather, and this will be, you know, Luke's ultimately responsible for his downfall / redemption ? So I was just thinking about the fact that we've seen absolutely nothing, and I just got a whole new level of excitement about about something I hadn't even considered about the face off of those two.
That's exciting. I had an interaction at work the other day, someone in the office who knows that I'm a big Star Wars fan and who seems to think that he is also a big Star Wars fan, asked me, he said, "So have you gotten your tickets yet?" And I said, quite honestly, I said, "Yes, I did. I'm entering full anxiety mode." And, you know, thinking he might laugh, even though I was telling the truth. And he said, what does that mean? And I said, "Well, I'm so afraid of dying before I see the movie that it's almost crippling to me on a day-to-day basis." And we just both sat there in this moment and he went, "I mean, I get excited about movies, but that's..." And then the interaction ended.
That was it. That was it.
We just sat in this terrible moment where he realized I was telling the truth.
He is not an honorary droid head, I have to say.
That's right. That's right. That's not too far off from what I've been telling people as well. It's like, I want to get this first viewing in. I know I'm just going to like be staring the whole time.
Yeah.
And then once I get that one in, then I can watch it 20 more times and enjoy it. I got to be there. We have assigned seats. Thank God.
Yeah.
The only thought that I've had, and this is just a theory, I'm going to throw one last theory out there before we see it. What if the Force flashback in The Force Awakens is not a flashback? What if it's a flash forward? What if it's the future?
Then what we're seeing back in Cloud City?
We don't know. Who knows? There's something that looks like that.
Anything's possible, Droidhead.
No, I mean, like, it showed the Cloud City. It showed the Cloud City thing, but like that rainy field, Luke with his hand, because we see his hand forward, pop out of the ground. What if that's
well? The idea is it could be, you know, she could be seeing multiple timelines.
Yeah, because she also saw the forest. She also saw the forest.
You're right. My God! What if it's a flash sideways?
Whoa!
JJ comes to the game.
Lost.
I had a theory that came to me while watching Return of the Jedi, because not necessarily a brand new theory, but it just reminded me of the second teaser for The Force Awakens. If you remember that one, it's where it's the voiceover of Luke.
The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. You have that power too.
You have that power too. And then I thought about how Daisy Ridley has said, what do you mean? The Force Awakens made it pretty clear who Daisy's or Rey's parent was, or whose father was her. So I thought maybe it's already decided. We just haven't been paying close enough attention, and that teaser trailer, while trailers can be somewhat misleading, might have given us everything we needed to know that Luke is Rey's father.
Yeah. Do you think like maybe there was just like a happy accident with Disney that was like, oh, we got a mystery?
They thought it was obvious.
They keep asking about it. Yeah.
They might just be referring to the fact that they have in press releases referred very clearly to this as the Skywalker saga. Yeah, maybe they assume like there's no mystery.
right, exactly. And they're just gonna like, all right, we'll run with it. Sure. Sure.
There's a bunch of people in a room just being like, why won't they just believe us?
I feel like that's. They're moving away from that focus a little bit, too, though.
So I believe that we have varying opinions. I think the last thing we'll say before we get into talking about Return of the Jedi, we'll obviously talk about more thoughts and theories about The Last Jedi in our next podcast, but we're going to get more into our rewatch here. I know we have varying opinions on what kind of exposure you have to some of the media that's going to be out in the week of the film being released, and I kind of want to go through. I know my perspective is I go on a complete blackout of all media. I don't read anything. I know, Ryan, you're of the opposite perspective. What does everyone think when you go into the film? Do you want to be blind when reviews start to come out?
You know, you give it all to me. Show me the movie. I don't care.
I try to avoid. It depends on the film. I'm trying to remember with Force Awakens, I did hold off on reading any reviews or any, you know, think pieces on any of like the movie blogs that I read. With most movies, I'll still read the reviews, and with certain movies, I'll just go in, you know, full spoiler. I don't worry about it. But I think there is something a little more special with Star Wars that I tend to be able to experience these things with only having seen like the trailers and like the official marketing. And so there's a lot of built up excitement, and I kind of just. Like, I'm excited enough right now. I'm good to just like go to the movie. So
yeah,
I'll probably avoid it.
I end up going through like three phases. Like after The Force Awakens, that's when I start digging around, like for people that took screenshots that are on set and like all that stuff, where it's like, I know if I find something, it might not be too big a spoiler at this point because the movie's not really even made yet. And then I'll switch to like the official stuff like Sam just mentioned. And then I did the same thing that I did last year. It was the international trailer came out, and then I watched that, and then I'm like, it just gave me a few more scenes of the movie without context. It's like, now I know that stuff happens. So I don't think I'll read any reviews. I'll probably just keep rewatching the things I've already seen.
I'm going to read everything, so I'll be the one with the knowledge.
What
will happen is that the embargo will lift, and I'll read a few reviews with the intention of just seeing... Yeah. What people think of the movie, not wanting to see any spoilers or anything, just being like, is it being received well, good or bad, blah, blah, blah. And
then we want to give.
Well, then inevitably I'll just get like a few two paragraphs deep and I'll read some kind of spoiler and I'll just say, well, it's over now anyway. And then I'll read everything without any kind of discrepancy. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Do we want to give predictions of a Rotten Tomato score?
I'm going 92.
I would say, why not?
Wow. Yeah.
I'm going to go with a 96.
Wow. Sam?
Oh, I do think it'll be 94.
I'm going 100. A flat hundo here. 100%.
Oh my God, we'll all be devastated when it's like 74.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But you're going to have to wait for
after
that final.
That international trailer.
That
Armand
final count,
White
though.
And Rex Reed are going to really destroy the curve.
I think the one thing that always stands out to me, though, is that I am, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I'm too influenced by critics that I like. And so if the headline from a critic gives away just, oh, fantastic action, but falls flat in plotting, then I start thinking about that for the entire movie. Mm, so that's why I stay away from it. And again, I've brought that up several times. But I just think that's why I'm concerned when the embargo is lifted and we'll avoid everything. But why don't we move into one, our next section of the podcast. I do want to say, if you want to follow us on Twitter, Droids Pod, Facebook, The Droids Podcast, email us at droidspod@gmail.com, Instagram at droidspod, and then, of course, please rate us, leave a review on iTunes if you're enjoying the show. We do want to offer up, we are going to do another poster giveaway in the lead up to The Last Jedi here in the next week. You have to be over 18 years old. There's no purchase necessary, but it will be a mystery poster that represents the Star Wars franchise. We've given away one before. If you send us a tweet and, you know, just mention the show or on Facebook, if you comment on the episode, we will be aware of it and we will give you a chance to win this poster. Chris, I know that you are usually the poster guru. This is going to be a
right.
mystery poster, but
this
I assume this
poster,
is going to be a, this is gonna be a pretty good one.
It's one of the best, but it's about one of 20 different posters that I have here, which hopefully maybe we'll start giving the other ones away. I have too many. My walls are covered.
So we look forward to finding out what the mystery poster is. And then if you're interested, tweet at us, mention us on Facebook. We will be entering you into the competition. And of course, again, over 18 and no purchase necessary. Let's get into our Return of the Jedi rewatch.
Return for the climactic clash between the forces of good and evil. Return to a galaxy far, far away. Return of the Jedi. An epic of heroes, villains, and aliens from a thousand worlds.
It's a trap!
The quest continues. The circle closes. The saga lives on. Return of the Jedi begins May 25th at a theater in your galaxy.
Obviously, we start these conversations all the same way. What do you think of first when you think of Return of the Jedi? I'm going to say and start things off here with the speeder bikes through the forest moon of Endor, because to me, that's the most identifiable action sequence that is particularly Return of the Jedi. Now, there's other lightsaber battles that are specific to the film. There's obviously the Empire. There's a lot going on, and even what happened early on. But I just think that's the most unique action that we see, and it's a new form of action that had not been a part of the series earlier. So that's the first thing my mind goes to, and Endor in general is probably what I associate with Return of the Jedi.
The thing that I think when I think of Return of the Jedi is, step aside La La Land. This is how you do a musical sequence.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Because, buddy, there's a real blinder of a musical sequence in this bad boy.
Oh, no.
Not if you're watching the despecialized
great edition,
by
George Lucas.
Oh, I love when he's singing so loud into the camera that they, like, see the spit flying off, but he's just, like, a cartoon at that point. There's, like, no reality involved.
Did everyone think that was a he?
Well, wow. No, there's two characters that sing. There's one that seems like a he, and the other seems like a she, because they put lipstick on her.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. I'm just, that's who I'm.
Interesting.
I'll jump in and say, I actually, the immediate thing I think of is, I actually don't think of a scene immediately with this movie. I think of, like, you know, all black suit, green lightsaber, Luke. Damn. I was obsessed with the green lightsaber as a kid. I thought it was so cool. I thought it was, at the time, as a kid, I thought it was so much better than the blue lightsaber, which I've since, like, doubled back on and actually don't feel the same way anymore. But I was just obsessed with, like, seeing the new color, and I thought Luke looked like such a boss, you know, in the all black, like sort of like new era Jedi garb. I just like picture that image really of him.
I'm going to go with the final Battle of Endor space battle. It's like they took what you liked about the first one and then they expanded it, the scope of it, like tenfold. It was huge. It was like I had not seen anything on that scale before.
I agree. In all seriousness, that's what I think of. Specifically the shot where they spin over while the Millennium Falcon's like going into the tunnel, the access hatch to go to the core. It's amazing.
Yep. It's one of the, like, it looks real. Like, that actually happened. I don't believe those are models.
Yeah, it's incredibly done.
Which I think kind of leads me to this. Is it a consensus that this is probably the most maligned version of the original trilogy? This is the weakest film out of the original trilogy. I can't imagine that any one of us is going to argue it's better than the first two. But I guess watching it again, it made me consider that for flaws and issues that you could find, there's plot holes, there's problems with the Ewoks that people will get into and we'll talk about. But I'm still watching a Star Wars film, and that end battle carries so much of it for me that I don't really have grievances with this in the long run. Obviously, I'm looking at it with rose-colored glasses, coming back from my nostalgia stage of watching it as a kid, but I still think that this maybe gets a little bit too much flack, but maybe one of you guys disagree. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think this movie does something that's really cool that not a lot of movies do, and in general, is the stakes are so high that a good, like, smaller example, and it kind of comes back to the end, is like when Luke is trapped with the Rancor monster, and it's like, even if he beats that monster, he's still like, he's still stuck. And then the same thing kind of happens at the end of the film. It's like, even if he beats Vader and the Emperor, he's still on the Death Star, which everyone's trying to blow up. So, right. And so it's like, there's this weird, like heightening that has happened. That's like, it's almost, there's no way out. And then once the tide turns, you like, you palpably feel it. And I don't think the other movies have had that feeling. It's like they built up to this moment, and then you can like, you could feel it when the tide turns.
I think,
go ahead, Sam. Sorry.
You know, I think what you're describing in terms of like the tide turn, I do think that's really like, successfully executed in this movie, particularly when you take it at, you know, as a pair with Empire. You know, the climax of this movie is like a really, really huge payoff. And I would say, I guess, Mike, in my response to your initial question is like this, I definitely think it gets a bit of a bad rap. And I think I was especially hard on it for a while. And over the last few years, again, I mean, I think we've said on the podcast, you know, I watch these movies, you know, the whole series 2 to 3 times a year. I think everybody else is similar or more. Sure. And I this has raised in my esteem the last few viewings, and I'm sure it might, you know, sink again in the future. Like they always kind of move around for me. But this one has been, it's been having a hot streak for me lately. I really sure. have enjoyed it a lot. So
what struck me watching it this time is how this, you know, we spoke about with the New Hope, how it was, it's kind of a surprisingly quaint movie, A New Hope. And it struck me with this, how Return of the Jedi is kind of this like dark mirror version of like the other side of the bookend in a way. You know, it opens on Tatooine again, but it's not like this kind of fairy tale kind of Tatooine. It's like they're immediately in danger and they need to escape it again. And then there's another Death Star, but it's kind of this gnarly, you know, unfinished thing. And like when they go on it, they're with like, or when Luke is on the Death Star, he's with Darth Vader, like right in the turmoil of it, as opposed to kind of like running around and having these kind of fun adventures. So it is kind of this like dark mirror version of A New Hope, which lends to the symmetry of the trilogy very nicely. Which I kind of realized on this viewing, because it always kind of bugged me a little bit that we have 3 movies and 2 of them have a Death Star in them. Like that was always strange to me.
Right.
But when looking at it like through this prism, it made more sense. But I do think that is still a strange concept that by the third movie, they were building another Death Star.
Well, I like to think they're building it concurrently. I think I brought that up before. That one was just always being built. Probably not. Don't they say like...
Well, now after seeing Rogue One, I feel like it makes it a little bit harder to believe that they got another one up and running, considering how difficult it was to build the first Death Star, at least from the takeaway from watching that movie. That was my perspective watching it again. However, I remember as a kid thinking, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, they got to build another one. Why wouldn't you? It was so powerful.
Right. I didn't have all that information.
I do want to go. I mean, we kind of are talking about it right now, but I feel like the perspective you have on this film obviously depends on what age you are, whether or not you're bothered by the Ewoks as a story. But it reminded me of the way I watched things growing up, and the way I even watch things now is that even you're kind of on this journey with these characters and you love them and you want to know more about them. You want to experience more with them. And just because part of their journey isn't maybe as serious or carry as much weight as other parts of it doesn't make it insignificant. Just because you have a lighthearted aspect of it, it doesn't, to me, make me feel like I'm, you know, watching something that is a burden or, oh, can we get to the real story? Because I still feel like I'm learning more about them and growing to like them even more and feeling like I'm on this experience with them. And I can understand that the criticism would be, oh, you know, the overall perspective is that doesn't really lend itself to an adult storytelling film. It's maybe better for kids. But I felt like as I watched it, I just learned more. And then it was all building to the point that I'd been with them on so many different adventures that now I got to see that adventure conclude, even if along the way I was having a little bit of silly fun in part of that. And Ryan, you might feel that as a way to absolve the prequels of some of their ills.
Sure. I think, yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think that I want to preface it by saying I love this movie, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm being unnecessarily down on it. I think that, again, watching it this time, how we've been talking about how it's impossible to watch these from a critical standpoint of like being films.
Yeah.
But it was a little easier for me with this one just because I feel like its deficiencies are kind of laid out very obviously, just in terms of like Richard Marquand, who directed this movie. He's just clearly not as skilled. Like the blocking isn't very elegant. The look of
everyone's kind of like
isn't as good.
Yep.
It's very kind of like down the middle. I just don't think that he's a particularly skilled director based on this movie. I've literally never seen any of his other work. But again, it's just like the blocking just is like very simple and not. I think of a lot of the antics on like Endor, where, you know, like specifically like where Han Solo leads a bunch of stormtroopers into a bunch of rebel rebel soldiers who are like pointing their blasters at them as like a quote unquote trap. But it looks like they moved like 10 feet and it's just kind of it's not that well done. With stuff like that.
I think the big thing for me is the you're bringing up really interesting points about blocking that I don't always feel like I see the director's touch as like I'm not as attuned to that. I've never made a film and I know some of you guys like have actually. So I think for me the some of the directorial choices don't always stand out so much as like the cinematography. Like I notice, you know, skilled shooters, you know, and I notice really, really skilled lighting. And so I know that's part of what the director, you know, works on and is involved in too. But like, you know, when we were talking last week about Empire and just how gorgeous that movie is and how it looks like it was shot today, this one doesn't. This one doesn't look like it was shot today to me. It does look a little bit flatter. And I think it's interesting you're sort of highlighting some of the directorial choices in that too, because I tend to notice it on like the technical stuff, just like the camera work's not quite as impressive to me this time around, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The time is real quick. The time that it lives in. So A New Hope looks like a 70s movie, which is a good thing. 70s movies tend to have this very textural quality to them that we all really respond to. Empire Strikes Back looks like a great movie. You know, it looks sleek and expensive, and it's really well done. And Return of the Jedi, I realized, especially this viewing, looks like an 80s movie.
Which I was just going to say that.
A compliment. That's
yeah,
not,
it has that.
It's not
that
amazing. It aged well.
Yeah, the film stock of that time, the only reason I looked this up is because there was like a weird shift, because I'm obsessed with the movie Home Alone, and there was like a weird shift like 89 and 90 with film stock. And before that, all of them had this, that kind of like what you said, like the 80s look. Like it was something about the processing of it. And I think particularly on these, on like a special effects movie, they were probably shooting with the intention of the effects. So they're making sure that like, however they shot, they could do the effects the best way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it has that bizarre look.
Yeah. It's like really low contrast. It's everything yeah, mm-hmm. is kind of bright where it's approaching... Empire has these like dark areas. There's a lot of like, rich blacks in it, and like the colors
right.
are really rich and
this
saturated.
Here is like it's like approaching like video type kind of like that look and I think a lot of that is probably done just because of the digital process. Like they had set it up in A New Hope, right, and then got to try it out in Empire, and then this one they like really had probably a pretty clear idea of like what special effects directing and a special effects producer had to do on a film set. So they were probably able to make this thing. It was an easy movie to make. No, I've often heard, I worked a long time ago. I worked with somebody that worked in the special effects department on this movie, and said it was the hardest movie they've ever made. Or like really? It's one of the hardest movies that's ever been made.
Wow. That's before we get into that, because that's really interesting. I just want to say that it says a lot about the 6 years, you know, A New Hope came out in 77. This came out in 83. The 6 years that kind of transpired in the film industry, the franchise really shows that. And part of it is because it helped invent it, right? So Star Wars and Jaws specifically kind of created this blockbuster effect. And by the time Empire came, George Lucas was working at the height of his powers in terms of financially and artistically, because he had just come off of the biggest success of a movie ever. And by the time this movie came out, it was almost a victim to the aesthetic that it had created. You know, there had already been movies that were ripping off Star Wars, and this was kind of the way that the industry was headed. And it seems like Return of the Jedi was a little more influenced by what Star Wars had created as opposed to what Star Wars was, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It feels like it was influenced by the outside world that Star Wars had, kind of the ecosystem that it created within Hollywood.
Interesting. That being said, like when they're in outer space, though, it works. Like it locks in.
It absolutely does.
Everything Imperial looks amazing in this movie.
Yeah.
Ryan, you bring up an interesting point that I wanted to get into, because of none of us having watched these movies in the theaters during the time period that they were released, but the idea of how Star Wars and Jaws and those films changed the blockbuster era. Does Return of the Jedi to you feel like a mainstream blockbuster film when you watch it again, or does it feel still kind of in that sci-fi realm that wasn't accepted as broadly as now Star Wars is? Because I bring that up because the thing I think about, or at least it reminded me of being a kid, and at the beginning when they're going into Jabba's palace and you're seeing all the creatures, you're seeing the weird kind of spider droid that's hanging out behind R2 and C-3PO mm-hmm. when they walk in, and the Gamorrean guards right. and all the people, Bib Fortuna. Right. Everyone, I kind of remember...
Sebulba.
Yeah, Sebulba now. What? Why was he there for 2 seconds? But as I watched it, I just remember, maybe this will sound off, but I thought, Star Wars is weird, and I love being weird with Star Wars, is what I thought watching it. And it just... Maybe that's part of that growing up in the 90s and feeling like, even in my particular household, I was the only one who was really into it, so it made me feel different and feel happy about being different. And I wonder if in 83, Star Wars was the mainstream blockbuster success. Obviously, it was, because we know how much of a phenomenon it was. But did it hit as many areas or demographics as now, say, The Force Awakens? Because everyone went to see The Force Awakens. There's no kind of nerd aspect like we've talked about in the past that people are like, no, I'm not going to go see that. That's a sci-fi movie, a nerdy movie. Now everybody sees it.
That's right. Really funny that you say that, because now that you're saying it, I'm remembering that I was kind of the only person in my house that was really into Star Wars. But, you know, like my family would watch it and stuff and like enjoy it. But my mom really could not stand the beginning of this movie because she thought Jabba was so gross. You know, and like gross. I don't think that's an uncommon feeling for people to be like, this is like weird and gross.
Yeah,
but it never even like dawned on me. I was just like, "Yeah, it's Star Wars. This is the best."
That's Jabba.
I think
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
I was just gonna say he's immune to the Force.
I think it's
great payoff.
I'm glad we. I'm glad we paused.
I think that it's interesting. I can only kind of go with again my parents. And it's like, I think the sense I have from my dad is like, he was never the biggest Star Wars fan, but he was like, you had to go see these things. Like, they were all anyone was going to talk about. And they were so impressive technically that like, you knew that like, even if you ended up hating one of the movies, you were going to marvel at it, you know? And my mom, though, I think had like the opposite, where it was like, I think she genuinely never cared about them. And like, to the extent that neither of my parents has seen Force Awakens. And I think it's mainly driven because my mom's just like not interested. I think my dad would watch it if it were on, you know, but like,
Me too. So
I think from that, like from sort of taking it, they were a generation that was there at the time. And I think that like, maybe it wasn't quite as mainstream of like, you must see this block, but like we live in like blockbuster culture now where it's like must see movies and stuff. And I don't know if it was quite there, but I do think it was by the time Jedi came around, like it was mass appeal. Like, I don't think it was still like a niche weirdo audience, you know?
But I agree with that. But I think almost in the filmmaking, I don't get the sense that The Force Awakens took as many chances or did something that could potentially put off a viewer, like, say, Ryan, your mom, you know, doing something along the lines of Jabba or doing something that would be so abrasive and possibly so niche in its interest. It just feels much more like, how can we please as many people as possible? And not that that turned out a bad movie. It's just what they now have as their focus.
That's very true. I definitely still have the sense that like Lucas with this movie was still doing like what Lucas wanted. He was not thinking about like,
he didn't have to answer to anyone.
He didn't have to answer to anyone, and he wasn't thinking about like making it mass appeal. I mean, I'm sure he was aware of the appeal and there was added pressure from that. But like, I think at the end of the day, he was still just saying like, I have more money and more time to make the story I was always trying to make. Whereas now there are considerations, you know, in every element of like, you have to be a little bit more careful where you place your feet, you know?
I think that weirdness that you're talking about too, not to bring up the prequels, I know I'm that guy, but we are starting to see the prequel George come out a little bit in this movie.
The silliness of the prequel George is in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
But like, you could just see like, in terms of Jabba and the grotesqueness of that, you can kind of imagine like, oh yeah, it'll be funny. She's wearing a gold bikini and she chokes him with a chain. And he's got this like big tongue and it's like gross. And it's just like, you feel like there'd be a committee of people being like, that's really off-putting, George.
Well, that actually did happen on the set.
Oh, really?
I believe apparently there was a slight mutiny because there was another dance number. So there was a creature that you saw in the original that looked like the CGI creature with like the long snout and the mouth. There was that creature who was just like cut to singing. But there was going to be a whole nother dance number, which was very technically challenging. It was frustrating the cast and crew. And then the cast and crew basically were like, we're not going to do this. It's in one of the behind the scenes features.
That's amazing to me that anybody would say that to him.
Well, I think they were just like, it's not going to work. Like, and I think the feeling was, I have to look this up.
It sounds like you got to do some Googling.
it's a pseudo story, but the one thing that always surprises me also with this movie is that the reason the Ewoks came about is because he wanted a planet of Wookiees. And they could not afford to have as many Wookiees as Ewoks because it literally takes half the costume. No joke. Like, if you look at the word Ewok, right? Spell it. Is it? You could rearrange. It says Wookiee or something. That's like, to even think that there's like a financial limitation on one of these movies is crazy to me.
Yeah, that's like really odd. That they didn't have enough money.
Well, and it's surprising. I mean, I think it's
well, was it money though?
Because of I think if it was, it's largely because of Lucas's insistence on like not going to outside money at this time, you know?
Yeah.
But I do want to ask, was it money or was it the fact that Chewbacca as a Wookiee and any other Wookiee was every individual hair had to be put in by a costume designer? Because I feel like I saw that in one of the special documentaries where it took forever to create that costume. And if you wanted an entire planet, it might have just been not time effective as it would be cost effective either.
All you gotta do to make a planet of Wookiees is make five Wookiee costumes and then with a computer move them all around to different places.
Well, right. I mean, he eventually got his Wookiee army in Revenge.
Yeah.
He certainly very true. Did.
And he had like four in real costume and the rest were CGI. Ryan, you touched on it briefly. Do we need to talk much about the Slave Leia costume? I think we all, you know, George, clearly there was some aspect of people questioning him, but no one could overturn him on that aspect of the movie, and it does not age well at all. It wasn't good.
It is certainly a problem.
Yeah.
It is very much a problem. Yeah, I mean, what can be said about it? You know, it's a problematic aspect of this movie that has become iconic. Like, it's,
you know, it's at every Comic-Con imaginable.
Yeah, I think what it's become now in terms of like at conventions and at cosplay and you know things like that, it's like, well, it's taken on a life of its own, and what, you know, how any person wants to, you know, interact with it, you know, now it's sort of, it's like their prerogative, but it wasn't the best move. You know, Leia is really poorly served by that choice. And Carrie Fisher was certainly very poorly served by that choice. And so in retrospect, it doesn't feel like it was, you know, whether his motive, you know, whatever his motivations, that just wasn't fully thought through, you know, in the right way.
Yeah, because it doesn't come across like they're like, this is really exploitative and we were making it so you can't look away. You know, like it's not handled that way, where it's like they're showing us something that's like really ugly and exploitative and we have to face it. They like make it this kind of like tantalizing thing. And I think that that's, you know, a problem.
Yeah. Well, the Disney is, after the Disney acquisition, they have said that will be no longer an image that they support. And
no longer
an
action figure that they create.
Yeah, exactly. They're moving past that whole thing.
Switching to talking,
Bob Iger sold all of his Slave Leia outfits.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, though, on the flip side of that, if James Murdoch takes over Walt Disney Studios after Bob Iger, that's all going to change. They'll bring back Slave Leia with him in charge. That's a rumor currently going on. If the Disney Fox acquisition happens, that is part of it. James Murdoch would have to be the likely successor to Bob Iger. None of that's official, but certainly seemed off-putting.
He also to me. It's written in as a clause that the gold bikini has to come back in merchandising immediately.
Well, if Fox has done anything, they know they're not very kind to women. We know that part.
It's like the Empire is coming back.
On a more positive note, I do want to say we talked a lot about Yoda and the Frank Oz performance in Empire, and it made me watch it more carefully just because of talking about how impressive the puppeteering was, how much Frank Oz brought that character to life. I feel like Yoda's death is one of my favorite, if not the best performance in the entire original trilogy, because there's no room for error in that performance because the camera is so tight on Yoda in the hut. Obviously, they could edit it. Obviously, they do different cuts, but every aspect of that individual take, when they don't cut, had to be perfect from Frank Oz, and I just think it's a masterful performance.
When gone am I, the last of the Jedi will you be?
I agree completely. I think everything he does, I mean, I don't know that I have anything additional. I don't know that I don't know that that scene is, you know, I'd have to think about it if it's my favorite, you know, moment of performance in the trilogy, but it is up there, and he deserves every bit of credit that he does get for his puppetry, his vocal work. And again, I just would, you know, again, echo what we said last week about, what he gives to Hamill. Because I think Hamill is excellent in any scene he's on Dagobah for. And I think that is, you know, that's a tall order, because, you know, ostensibly it's just him. He's not actually acting against the human except for, you know, the blessing of Frank Oz. So,
right.
There is sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Yoda does one of those kind of classic, like, movie trope deaths, though, in this scene, where it's kind of like, is he dead? And then he, like, yeah, says another word. he kind of, like, falls back, and there's, like, yeah. Oh, wait, there is. And what else? Keep going.
I think there is something, and, you know, maybe this is just me projecting emotionally as I get older in life, but this franchise and this trilogy specifically is very, for a mainstream franchise, there are these spiritual aspects of it. And, you know, they kind of present these philosophies, like how we were talking in the last episode about do or do not, there is no try, and how we've taken that so seriously, even though we really don't know what it quite means. And how this trilogy presents death of these characters, you know, like Yoda and Ben Kenobi and stuff, as something that they don't fear. You know, when I think about how kids would be watching this and, you know, like entering kind of into adolescence and, you know, you start losing people like grandparents and things like that. And for this this franchise to present death as something that can be like peaceful and that these characters accept, you know, like openly, like Yoda essentially is just like, yeah, no, it's going to happen. And I'm not scared. I'm just laying down in bed and then I'll disappear. And, you know, like that kind of thing. I think that there is something very touching about that. In presenting it that way, especially in something, you know, where like people are getting blasted and like things like that, that there are these kind of peaceful moments where these characters kind of accept it and they're shown as not being afraid. I don't know. It just kind of struck me more watching it this time.
Well, that is interesting, because it's like that is something that the Jedi do. Like that is one of their, right? It's almost like the dark side. They want to live forever. That's why they're doing all this. Mm-hmm. And the Jedi are like, we're cool to die. Like, it's very, it's kind of like elves in Lord of the Rings, that kind of thing. It's like they know when they're ready to go, whereas the Sith are like in the dark side of trying to do as much as they can to like be around forever.
Neither, you know, in the original trilogy, their deaths don't appear violent. Even going back to Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, it's despite being in a duel, you know, death in battle, his is. It's not a violent death, and in fact, it's the opposite. Is like you say, Ryan. It's peaceful. It is ready. It is accepting. It is, you know, an understanding and welcoming of what lies next. And it kind of, you know, it does have that sense of sort of like a calm that there will be something next. You know, that obviously the movies then continue to develop over time. But I hadn't really put a lot of thought into it, but I think that's a really astute observation. I like that.
Yeah, and it also, like Chris said, how they're the dark side, they're all trying to live forever, and that feeds into the thematic, you know, fear leads to anger leads to hate. The Anakin story starts with him being afraid of death, not his own, but of the people around him, and not being willing to accept it, and that fear leading him to the dark side. And to see that contrast is really striking, especially if you look at it over all of the movies, you know, including the prequels. It really ties together nicely, especially with Yoda, because he literally, I mean, that's an incredible image. He's a 900-year-old alien that tucks himself into bed and just falls asleep.
When 900 years old you reach, look as good you or not. Soon will I rest. Yes. Forever sleep.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of beautiful.
I actually wanted to, going off, so tangential and related to this. You know, you talk about where Anakin's story starts, and it all is born of fear, and fear specifically of death and those around him and everything. And we see his path, you know, obviously over the course of all six movies, you know, and in the prequels, you see his path to the dark side. And this movie, Return of the Jedi, is definitely supposed to have us questioning Luke and maybe worried for Luke's soul. You right. know, would he go to the dark side? And this is actually one thing that I'm curious how you guys feel. This is a thing where I think the movie like feels like it didn't lean far enough into it or didn't quite mm-hmm. nail it, because I don't ever get the sense that they made Luke seem, you know, dark enough or tempted enough in this film to ever make me doubt that he was gonna, you know, be on the side of right. I think, you know, they have him, you know, he gives some tough talk to Jabba, and he's, you know, more confident and even cockier than we've seen him in the past, which I think is supposed to be suggestive of a potentially dangerous Luke, a potentially, you know, more reckless or mm-hmm. dare, you know, maybe potentially dark Luke. But it doesn't ever quite land for me, you know, and they sort of hit on it about the fear for his sister during the mm-hmm. final duel. But I don't know. How did that play for you guys?
I'll say
as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, I was. Go ahead, Chris.
As a kid, I would say that actually worked on me. I thought that he was at risk of being evil. Like I remember asking like, oh, is he bad? Like, because the very first thing we see him do is like choke two of those, the guys, like he's using the dark side's moves. And I kind of like that introduction to Luke in this movie where it's like, he's super sure of himself, but he's standing on a trap. So it's like that classic thing where it's like, you think you're ready, but you're not. And so it's like this supposed like new masterful Jedi now is like susceptible to these weaknesses. And by the end of the movie, he keeps, we don't know that he's learned enough. And so it as a kid, I was worried about the risk.
Chris, I was on the same page as you were, because I was bought in, and I think it was because I was susceptible to what the story was trying to tell us. I just felt like as a kid, it was at the point where, no, I believe this could happen because I've been told so by the Emperor throughout this movie that they could turn him. So I was worried throughout, and I think that my greatest joy in watching it as a kid was the moment he says, I'll never turn to the dark side, and he throws away his lightsaber. Because right, I still...
Yeah, that's a... I don't disagree with that at all. I'll
never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
I think, yeah. I guess what I'm highlighting, it's interesting. I guess what I'm highlighting is the fact that they do, the movie tells, and I think it's awesome that you guys do feel it's a little more successful than I feel it is, because for me, I feel like the movie is telling me that Luke is struggling with this and will be struggling with this and could be bad, but I don't ever feel it. And maybe I've just seen it too many times now.
That's long gone. Yeah.
It's interesting that you say that, how it's telling you, because I agree with you, because you know, the Emperor is essentially vamping the whole movie, you know, he's just saying it.
Right.
But I also think
it's his deal. All six movies.
It's telling you these things thematically, but from a character standpoint, the way that Luke is taking the information, it's kind of highlighting what it's showing you is that the dark side comes at you sideways. If that makes sense, you know, the Emperor is saying like, oh, let it flow through you, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to do the voice, although I could if I wanted.
Skywalker, your friends are on the camp.
But it's not him saying it. It's when they bring up Leia. It's when they bring up that his friends are going to die, that he becomes fearful for his friends. And that it's not that they're saying that, join us in the dark side, and he's like contemplating their proposal. It's that he loses his temper and cuts off Darth Vader's hand. And it's that, again, it comes at you sideways. So whether it's intentional that the Emperor is kind of misdirecting him by just making him angry. I don't think that what the Emperor is saying is tempting him at all. But I think that they're putting him in this position where he, like his father, may feel like he has no choice.
Yeah.
The way Anakin felt like he had no choice.
Right, right. Yeah, they're putting him in this zero-sum game.
Chris, you touched on something that I really had noticed, I'd seen in the film and other times I've watched it, but this time it made me think about the early scene in Jabba's palace where he does choke the two Gamorrean guards, because we've never seen a light side force wielder choke anybody with the force, except for in that scene. And so that was what set it off, other than him just wearing black the entire time, early on in the movie, that I felt like, oh, he is in danger of going to the dark side, because look, he's using something that should not be used by anybody who's on the side of truth and justice and light in the galaxy.
Right. Yeah. He's kind of like, I think he's like still like a bit of like a teenager with the force. He's like, I got this, I can drive the car fast. And then he's like, whoa, it's going a little too fast. This is a little too real. and then like, it's like very clear, because like when they try to capture him again, he's just like, they just get him. And then he's like, you'll be sorry. That's another great moment when he's like, there's a lot of no way outs in this movie, and they all pay off. Like he installed that lightsaber in R2 in case this would happen. What?
No, that was so convoluted, and trying to run through that in my brain when watching this time, I was like, okay, like, come on. You know,
it's like, when did they all talk about this? Cause they're all like looking at each other.
And you wouldn't want a lightsaber in case there's some creature in the basement of Jabba's palace that you might have to fight.
Like open, yeah.
I do
want to kyber crystals. He had to choose his moments.
right.
I do want to go back to our segment that we usually have as favorite line. There are some good ones throughout this. You know, I don't know. Fly casual. We shall double our efforts. You're a feisty little one. I mean, I like this.
Oh, that's great. I leave for a few, what does he say? Like, I leave for a few weeks and I come back and everyone has delusions of grandeur. I think of that phrase all the time.
That's a great one.
I'm out of it. For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
True from a certain point of view. I think it's a precursor to our current 2017, you know, because the truths that we cling to, they can depend on your point of view entirely.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
From my point of view, the Jedi are evil.
I think a favorite quote of mine on this watch, or one that at least stood out to me on this watch, was in that final battle. As Vader is sensing Luke's feelings, you know, his care for a sister, Obi-Wan was wise to hide her from me. Now his failure is complete.
Yeah.
And I think, like, man, that really makes you hate Darth Vader.
Obi-Wan was wise to hide her from me. Now his failure is complete.
Like, Badmouth and Obi-Wan, I got so fired up when he said that. I think it's a great line.
Sam, you told me you had to buy a new TV this week because your one had cracked in half?
I had to buy two new TVs because I picked it up right where I left off.
I was by Sam's window and he was throwing stuff at me like Darth Vader did, and then broke the window and I flew out.
Chris, how's your hand?
It's gone.
The line I can never get out of my head comes from a Bib Fortuna, and it goes, "What a Willy Wonka."
Oh, if we're doing that, Iwata no Bada.
Why does
Salacious Crumb?
Oh yeah, right. This is where it all starts with Crumb. Here, this is where his side story really starts.
That reading that we're going to do in one of these podcasts one day. Why does Bib Fortuna drop into English when he says he's no Jedi? Why does he change languages? I don't understand.
Right.
This is not a favorite quote, but one of the things I always love about this movie is the callback to A New Hope when 3PO said, I'm not much of a storyteller, I'm just an interpreter. And then he's telling a story to all the Ewoks with all this gravitas and the sound effects. And I just love that moment, even though maybe the Ewok reactions are a little bit cheesy. I just still thought that was a lot of fun that he was now a storyteller.
Yes, R2, I was just coming to that. Toronto, gosh. Master Luke and Chimini-Chudu. Uta Millennium Falcon at Chimney Cloud City.
Yeah, there's some payoff there. That is really great. Especially, yeah.
I wrote down just, I also love just the sort of like technical, I don't know, it's sort of like a technical joke that the fact that 3PO is like using recorded sounds yeah. from the adventures, like the idea of like as a droid, he's always recording like your Alexa or something. So,
yeah, so like he had a few sound effects though.
Now all our listeners are going to have their thing going off.
But he had like a few sound effects of like, how did he get that?
His Vader breathing though was clearly a manifestation. It was not a direct recording.
Right.
Yeah, but how is he outside of the Falcon to get like shots of a TIE fighter sound?
Yeah. Did he have rights to that?
I wanna touch on Sam, how your favorite line about how it makes you really hate Vader. And I spoke to you actually outside the pod about this. I was texting you about what you brought up about Darth Vader and Luke last time, about how they were sharing a moment and he was away from the stormtroopers and how he was talking about getting away from the Emperor. And I told you in the text, I thanked you for bringing that up because it haunted me, truly. Right. Like it made me think about this relationship so differently than I ever have. Darth Vader and Luke's, not mine and yours. but I was thinking about that a lot in this, and there's a specific line that really, really touched me where Vader, you know, he says, he's talking about like, it's too late for me, son, which is showing him, you know, kind of on the nose softening up, which is great. But he says, I can't remember the exact line, but he says like, I'm on the dark side. I must obey my master.
You don't know the power of the dark side. I must obey my master.
Yes.
And there's this moment where he becomes, and I'm using this in a very literal sense of the word, it's very pathetic. It's a pathetic moment, you know, where he's really dressed down. There, he's this big domineering figure that we've been following for three movies as the big bad. And he says, I need to listen to my master. And to see again with I know I'm a prequel apologist. I think that they really do add in this like giant arc, having watched all of them in a row now, which I've never done before in this kind of short amount of time. And to see how he is so affected by this person and how he's so broken at this point in his life. He's like just kind of submitted to the fact that he'll always be under this dude's thumb.
Well, exactly. And the fact that all of the Jedi training is, we know the structure of Jedi training, which is that, you know, you are a Padawan, and then ultimately you are a Jedi master and you take on a Padawan apprentice, and then the apprentice becomes a master. And it's always about forwarding knowledge and giving, you know, empowering the trainee. Whereas we also know from all six movies, you know, the Sith training structure is that there is a master and an endless line of apprentices.
Right.
It's, you know, it's never to better you or to graduate you to a higher level.
It's about to hold power. Yeah, it's like to hold power.
Yeah,
that's how you can hold power.
There's also this moment where it's after Luke cuts off Vader's hand and Luke's having this kind of moment of recognition, and the Emperor says, like, kill him and join me. And Luke doesn't do it. And then Vader gets up and stands next to the Emperor.
Yeah.
You know, it's such, he's so powerless in this moment where he watched this dude be like, kill him, I don't care, I'm going to use you now. And then when Luke doesn't, he gets up and stands by his side again.
And then he says, no.
Do you know what's the bummer about that, adding the no line? The music at that point in that movie is so good. Good, because it's like it's like a brand new theme you hear too. Like everything just moves past where you, like, I think going into this movie, there's a pretty fair assumption that Luke's gonna win. There's a pretty fair assumption that good will trump evil, and when you go beyond that, just like a little bit, and then you start to hear new music, like it feels hopeful. Like it feels like there's a future there that by the time you get to that point, that's kind of going back to like the tipping point of when like you could feel in this movie when things shift to the other side. And I think that's really cool.
There was a feeling of hope in the Yub Nub song and they got rid of it. And now I never feel hopeful again.
I know. Oh, yeah. Right. It became like mall pan flute music.
But hey, it was really good to see Naboo again, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Sure it was.
That's right.
Sam, were talking about the scene again where it's the feeling for sister, and then Ryan, you were mentioning how we'd never really seen Vader in a position of kind of weakness. I love the head turn and the gasp that he has when Luke comes out of the shadows and yells, you know, no, or whatever it is about Leia. Because that's the first moment where I felt like he was caught on his heels, that he seemed beatable. And watching it again, I just love that quick shot where he turns and sees where the yell's coming from.
Agreed, 100%. I do think this is, I mean, this lightsaber battle is, you know, as good as any in the series. And it reminds me a lot of one that's maybe my favorite now, which is from The Force Awakens, which is it's well, I guess we'll get to this, you know, but just the emotion behind it, you know, and the fact that, you know, I think I want the fight, you know, the fights are effective when they're rooted in character and when they're rooted in, you know, when you care about both sides or particularly about the good side winning. Right. And the fact that it's so it feels so improvised, it feels so life and death. It actually feels like a fight this time around, more so than any of I think the other movies. And that moment like highlights it. That moment of surprise of getting him on his heels, you're like, oh, Luke could do this.
Yeah.
He could win. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, you kind of hope that there's more of that to come. You don't think they're going to miss out on opportunities to do that, and then. In Last Jedi and in the next two movies we're going to see. I'm very excited that we're going to continue. You feel like you're in the right hands in terms of knowing how to execute those lightsaber duels correctly.
Yes, I think so.
I just got goosebumps when you said the next two movies. I'm so focused in on this Last Jedi that I like just forgot that there's another one.
We got to take this one day at a time, man.
Yeah, I can't.
Which, by the way, we talked about this off the podcast, but Rian Johnson has announced that this will not be the trilogy that he creates separate from the Skywalker mm-hmm. saga, will not be mm-hmm. the Old Republic, and it will not have any connections to any other canon that's already existed. So you're not going to find Rey. You're not going to have Finn. It's going to be entirely new.
But you're going to have Spider-Man. You're going to have Superman.
Yeah.
You're going to have Aquaman.
And the X-Men when that deal goes
and
through
the
with
X-Men
Fox.
2021.
I think
I'm glad to hear that from Rian Johnson, but I also do hope that they do something with the Old Republic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity to make a lot
more
movies.
I think that's a great, that could be a great series, The Old Republic.
Maybe that could be the television series.
Yeah, I hope so.
And if it has the budget, I think that was my theory before, was that we would go back to the Old Republic and the television series. All right, so
yeah, very cool.
Let's get into a new segment that we're going to have be a regular thing on the podcast. Chris, I know you have some trivia that you're going to ask all of us here, and I think it's a good way to kind of bring up, see what we really know and if we can get the answers.
All right, well.
Also, we have too many people on the pod, and we got to find some system to kick someone off. So here we go.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
How are you thinking that's not you, Ryan? I think it's been pretty clear we've been talking about you're on a short leash.
Yeah.
We all know.
I'm on the
chopping
block, guys. Let's hope this goes well.
That's right. That's right. You're going to be pork meat pretty soon, buddy.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
There was some tweet out there that said Luke Skywalker does not eat porgs. So don't worry, he's not eating porgs.
I saw that.
Well, Chris does.
We'll see what happens after The Last Jedi.
All right, Chris, explain how this is going to work.
All right, have you ever heard of the game show Family Feud?
Sure.
So
Wait, with Steve Harvey or Louis Armstrong? Is it the Louis Armstrong one?
Louis Armstrong? Louis Anderson.
Oh, yeah. Anderson. Yeah, I was off on that one.
Jazz musician? Louis Anderson.
Satchmo doing Family Feud would be amazing.
I met Louis Anderson, yes.
All right. So basically, we took a survey of 100 people. I don't know how they did. This is an officially licensed Star Wars Family Feud. It was given to me by my sister and her family. over Thanksgiving or my birthday. So we're going to play here live on air for the first time ever. We're not going to really play by the rules. We're just going to read the list here. So I'm going to give you a topic, and I'll tell you how many are left. And everybody gets one guess. And, you know, the Family Feud is ding, 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 or eh. And so we'll just do that. I'll use the sound effects here. We have a budget for that. And here we go. Ready?
Shoot. Wait, so we have to. So we say ding, right, ding, ding.
Just
no, rhymes. I'm gonna say ding. Just I'm gonna say whatever. Ding, ding, ding.
Chris, all we're ready. Just lead us through it.
Are you gonna call on us, right, Chris?
No, you have to. Oh, well, you. All right. Here's what you gotta do first. First, you just have to jump in. So you gotta make, let's say, make your Chewbacca noise to jump in. I don't know who's making the noise, so you're just gonna have to go on the honor system. Honor all right, system. Ready?
Yeah. Why don't you give a noise specific to each of us?
All right.
No,
one Chewbacca.
No, that's a good idea. That's a good idea, Mike.
All right, so Mike, you say that's impossible.
Okay.
Can I do Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yep.
Okay.
Sam.
I'll say his failure is now complete.
All right, great. All right, okay. Ready? All right, here we go. Name something associated with Admiral Akbar.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ryan?
It's a trap.
Ding, ding, ding. That's the number one. You get 55 points.
Woo. So it's over, right? Because he won.
No, we keep going through.
That's the only question.
Wait, you keep going through the list. You keep going through the list.
Great game, guys. Staying on the podcast. Oh,
God. This is the first and last version of this segment.
Now his failure Sam? Is complete.
Go, Sam.
Calamari?
Ooh, do we have calamari? Bing! Number four. That's 7 points. That's number four. So we got one, it's a trap. Four, Mon Calamari. I just realized how bad Family Feud is for radio because you need to see the board.
It really the tension's really gone, but
it's crazy. All right.
That's impossible.
All right, Mike, what do you got?
Destroying the Death Star?
Do we have Destroying the Death Star? Survey says, ding! I'll say Rebel Alliance, 8 points. That counts.
What?
I'll take it.
The Rebel Alliance, they destroying the Death Star.
Wait, there's really, right. There are really 10?
I didn't know we were being that liberal with our answers.
There's two left.
Oh, okay.
Admiral Akbar.
Now his failure is complete.
Sam.
Swinging chair, floating chair.
Incorrect.
Ah,
I should have built it up a little bit.
One strike. Right. Yeah, you're supposed to say survey back. Says, and then
survey
wait.
Survey says. Yeah, you're right.
Obi-Wan right. Kenobi.
Ryan?
White jumpsuit.
Survey says, white jumpsuit. Sorry.
That's impossible.
Mike.
The forest moon of Endor.
All right, we're gonna speed this up because we're never gonna get these. And I don't know what this one says. This one it says Home One. Do you know what that is?
Home One.
That's Home One. That must be the name of the ship. Ship.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't give. I'm surprised you didn't give Mike that for Endor because it's home to some.
And then number two is fish.
Oh, well, that...
I need to know what kind of criteria we're working with here.
I know. That's pretty crazy. I don't know what Home One is.
Home One is the ship that he, pilots or is commanding.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's the capital ship. It is a modified MC-80A Star Cruiser.
Oh, Sam just knows that.
Wow,
yep,
Sam.
It's 1,200 meters long. It uses sublight engines, sublight thrusters for engines. Shielding is from deflector shield generators.
What kind of engines are those?
What's that?
What kind of engines?
The sublight thrusters.
Oh, can you explain how those work?
Yeah, one second.
I'm thinking maybe next time we should do Trivial Pursuit. It might work a little better.
It's pretty good. Yeah,
engines that let starships break through an atmosphere and fly through real space at speeds below the speed of light.
Makes sense.
In order to attain speeds beyond the light, the ship required a hyperdrive. So it's a non-hyperdrive thruster for the layman. Like yourself.
I knew that. I just wanted to make sure that you guys did too.
So who won, Chris? Who won?
Oh, well, I mean...
It was me.
It was Ryan.
You got 55 points.
Mike, I think you lost, but you have all the recording equipment, so we'll let you stay.
Yeah. Yes. You could make an edit that kind of switches it up.
So what I'm getting is that we're asking Chris to leave after this game.
I'm the loser here. No, this worked. The other one, this one real quick, we're just going to go around one more time. Name something in Star Wars beginning with the letter L. Ryan.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ryan.
Lightsaber.
Ding, ding, ding. Survey says lightsaber. 50 points.
Woo.
Sam.
The laser.
Survey says. Eh.
Oh, no.
Luke, Leia.
Lando.
Ding, ding, ding. Leia and Luke. They're two different line items. You got them both.
Is Lando one?
Lando, yeah, it's lightsaber Lando, Leia.
Lobot one? Because I think Lobot should be one.
Lobot is not one.
Come on.
We didn't talk enough about Lobot. Also, can we talk a little bit about how Boba Fett was supposed to just be this niche cool thing that, like, people in the know knew about? Because the way he dies in Return of the Jedi is so unceremoniously...
Well, but aren't we applying, though, like, this whole history we have with him? Like, he was just a dude who showed up in the movie for one scene before.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I still can't.
Like, everybody always says how unfair it is that he died that way, but it's like, they didn't know that he would be this huge thing yet.
Either. Right. I'm just saying, like, that just kind of shows how it was forced.
I mean, technically, he was in, like, five scenes in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. No, I think he was just like a really like obscure character that the people that enjoyed Star Wars at the time really liked Boba Fett just because he was cool looking.
I think it's purely a design thing. I think it's the same reason that, you know, I think the first look you get at Darth Vader, you know that Vader's going to be one of your favorite characters and one of the great villains because he cuts this amazing silhouette. The design is impeccable and unlike anything in any other movie to that point. You know, it's like a completely revised, it's medieval knight, it's samurai, it's sci-fi, it's, you know, space invader, it's everything. And then, you know, in the next movie you introduce something that is, it feels like it's in the same world, right? But it looks a little different. It's a little bit more like pieced together and, you know, battle armory. I think honestly it was just how cool he looked.
He just looks so cool.
People expected him to be that cool.
Yeah.
But when he looked that cool, you wanted to see him fight, and you wanted to see what he could do with that armor and with that outfit. Right. And then we got nothing. We got a quick moment.
Yeah.
He didn't even actually do anything except for tie Luke up with his kind of shooting string, and then he gets knocked over by Han Solo. That's why I think a standalone film for him, it would be great to see him in high action. I guess we saw Jango Fett do that in the prequels, but that's not Boba Fett.
Yeah, did Jango ask the cloners to genetically take out his ability to fly a jetpack?
But then they put in a Wilhelm scream. Then
did he say I want to clone and make sure that he's extra delicious to Sarlacc pits?
Well, let me ask about the Sarlacc pit. Is watching it again and thinking of the special edition, I thought it was so much more terrifying without some head and tongue. Why was that added?
Yeah,
it was worse before.
Oh. Yeah.
I was waiting for it to start singing Feed Me Seymour. That's for all my Little Shop heads out there.
Yeah. That's for keep it on your other pod, Ryan. Keep it on the other pod.
But I think
our pod is the Little Shops you're looking for.
Oh, that's a good connection.
The Oz connection?
Frank Oz connection. Yeah.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I think there.
I also think it was scarier when it was just... I mean, let's just say what it was. It was a spiked anus before.
It was.
I think that passes the clean lyrics, right?
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
But it was a spiky anus.
Yeah, I think you're right. And nobody likes that.
No, that's... It's the stuff of nightmares.
I'll have a quick did you know moment, and I think maybe most of you know this, but the only thing remaining of the Jabba the Hutt costume is his eyes. Everything else has disintegrated with time.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Whoa. I did not know that. That's so... Even more gross.
Well, I can't imagine
what
that was.
Out of the stuff they made out of the eyes?
It almost makes him more beautiful because we know that all things must end.
And that
now, what's the?
I'd hate to be the guy status, who discovered the half disintegrated Jabba costume.
What's the status of the Pizza the Hut costume from Spaceballs?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I hope it still exists.
That was destroyed immediately.
That was eaten immediately.
Yeah. That's being held in the Museum of Overrated Things. Oh, I said it.
Oh, wow.
I'll take that to my Spaceballs pod.
All right, I think we've reached the time limit on this edition of the podcast. We will be back next week. It will be overwhelming, the fact that we will be watching Star Wars next week in a theater, a new movie. I don't know how we'll be able to talk about it.
Yeah, before you know, when we do the episode before, you'll be listening to Four Men in Crisis.
Yep. I'll just be screaming the whole time.
Ryan, I have to ask, are you just, when you're not going to work, locking yourself in the house and making sure that you don't have anybody, you know, no delivery men who could possibly want to murder you? Yeah.
You know that scene in Final Destination where he's in a cabin wearing like oven mitts?
Yeah, that's you that day.
That's you. For the next week.
It's just like that. Well, also, when that person at work said to me, you know there's another movie after this, like I didn't know. I said what I said to Chris, completely serious. I said, I have to take this one movie at a time.
That's the way you have to do it.
I wonder what he's telling people about our interaction today.
That will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Join us next week as we get ready for the release of The Last Jedi. Hopefully Ryan will still be with us, that he will not have passed away in his bed and faded away into a ghost or spirit.
God, if I do die, this will be really poignant for you guys.
Oh, boy. That'll do it. We'll catch you next week on the Droids You're Looking For.
Droids you're looking for.
This is madness.